So as I said, tonight we're going to just explore the third step a bit. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. And I was thinking how well this segues into the 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation. The interconnection of all these steps is really amazing. Like all the steps, this one is filled with many nuances and it can be progressive. It's not like you take it once and it's over. I find over the years that step just gets richer and richer, you know, in so many ways. And for many people, it can be heartwarming. And for many people in the beginning, it can be quite confusing. So you'll see where you are with this. Sorry. This is a step that actually is practiced in our whole recovery life. And I even, you know, we have Alcoholics Anonymous and all the other Addiction Anonymous. I think they should have something called Regular Person Anonymous. This program is such a spiritual program of living life, you know, recovering the essence of who we are. I really count my blessings that I found this route through the path of devastation, but grateful for that. From the Buddhist perspective, it's a step that works towards unharnessing ourselves from this prison of the ego. And trust me, it is a prison. And it's this ego, and we need to have an ego because we need to make decisions, we need to do things. But the ego that sees everything from the little prism of I, me, mine, it just eliminates almost like the rest of the world. It's me. Well, what am I getting from it? And this is the big release that comes as we go deeper into the steps and into the Buddhist teachings as well. For years, I know I did, so I'm going to say we, okay? For years, we turned our will and our lives over to destructive substances, destructive behaviors. And we didn't think about who am I turning my will over to, right? It just came kind of naturally. And now, instead, we're saying we want to turn our will and our lives over to some path of constructive living, of happy living. We're saying we're becoming willing to see, to hear, to learn, to shift, even though this can be difficult because we're so grounded in how we see things. A stumbling block in this step, as in the second step, for many people is the whole idea of God. And I've addressed this a number of times, as if one can address it once, takes care of everything about God. But I like to think of it more as, what's a higher purpose? A higher power could be, what's a higher purpose? And these are questions that are important. They're asked by people when they first come into the program, and as they stay and as they learn more. And, you know, there are so many different definitions of God. So many ways of relating to this mystery called God, and each person holds on to his or her own idea of it, fine. But we don't have to be sucked into somebody else's idea. What does this mean to you, if anything? So there's a wonderful book called Zen of Recovery by Mel Ash, and this is what he had to say. The genius of Bill and the recovery program lies in the part of this step that states God as we understand him. The words God and him are merely convenient catchphrases easily understood by people in a predominantly Christian male-centered culture and era. And it's just so nice to have that written. And he says the inclusion of the phrase as we understood underscores the complete spiritual democracy of recovery. I love that. The spiritual democracy of recovery. It's like what works for you is what's so important. Whatever happened here? Sorry. I don't think we have to figure it out. And actually, I think it would be hubris to think we can figure out what this even means, what God is. I don't think it's something you can put words around. Although there are many religions that do, and I'm not saying anything against it, but it's what works, what's going to work for you. So in terms of the step, we can ask, what's the functional purpose of this step? What's the functional purpose of turning our will and lives over to the care of what and why? So perhaps, just for tonight, we can see the word God as a beautiful pointer, a majestic pointer to something, to an experience beyond our usual egoic selves, right? A different form of consciousness, a different perspective. And with that, I think a lot can open. A lot can open. Kevin Griffin put it very beautifully in his book. He said, the main idea about God that I think is important is I'm not him. So I could have cut out all those other words and work it that way. And then there is something else in this step that can cause a little consternation for people, and that's the issue of control. At first people can hear this and say, what? I have to give up control of my life? Turn my will and all of that over? But it's not exactly that. It's more about giving up trying to control what cannot be controlled. And actually, most of us are prisoners of an out-of-control mind. You just have to sit in silence for 30 minutes and you get the picture. I've been meditating 39 years. I really do have the picture. Yeah. And we think we have a mind that has all the answers. It just astonishes me. I mean, I still get caught in it, but when I think about it, it astonishes me. People rebel against the idea of turning their lives over to something outside themselves. It can feel like control is being ripped away. And actually, the opposite is true. The more we let go, the more we can control. Can you control the cellular functioning of your body? Can you control the aging procedure? Can you control the weather? It's a lot we can't control. And you know, sometimes with the weather, how many times I hear people say, it's not fair, the weather shouldn't be this way, I have to go somewhere tonight. What's not fair? The weather just is. And one of the most beautiful teachings of the Buddha and people who've come after him, we're talking 2,500 years ago, it's learning how to live with what is. It sounds so simple, doesn't it? But it's even harder when we don't want to know what is, because it shouldn't be that way. Okay. Somewhere I read, I love this one, self-will is an infantile expression of omnipotence, the delusion that I can force life to be exactly as I want it to be. How deluded we can be. Not just alcoholics and other addicts, let me. And one of the profound teachings of the Buddha, and you see a lot of it now in cognitive psychotherapy, is with our minds we create our world. Please let that sink in for a minute. With our minds we create our world. And it's so profound when you think, even after a short time in program, how you see things differently and different things start to happen from that. you see it differently, you start to act a little differently. I mean, sometimes it can take years. With our minds, we create our worlds. So, by the way, I just want to say control in and of itself is not a dirty word. The problem is when we keep trying to control what we have no business controlling, and no power to control, and no right to control. And although we cannot control how life works, we do have the capacity, I said it before and I'll say it again and again, we do have the capacity with working on how to respond. How are we going to respond to a situation, to a person, to the weather, to anything? And how we respond can be the difference between suffering and peace of mind. Just one little... I'm sure you've had what I've had. You've had, at the end of the day, go, why did I do that today? Right? And instead of beating yourself up about why did I do it, it doesn't hurt to really ask the question with curiosity. Why did I do that today? Because then we'll learn a lot about ourselves. So a main key here, as we're talking about overall, we're not talking so much about a religious path as a spiritual path. A path that ultimately can lead to love, compassion, and peace. And wouldn't it be nice if that was the guiding principle of all countries around the world? Love, compassion, and peace. Okay, so the step starts by saying we made a decision. Made a decision. Something in all of you tonight, for some reason or another, made the decision to get here. It's interesting to look at what got me to make a decision to get here. Make a decision. After a while, if we make certain decisions over and over again, we don't make the decisions anymore. They make themselves. Because I can tell you by the end of my drinking, I wasn't making a decision to take a drink. I love that thing. The man takes the drink, the drink takes the drink, the drink takes the man. And we find that with a lot of the habits in our lives. And then you can look at how many times in our lives do we waffle. Oh, well, I'll think about it tomorrow. I've put on many decades, and at some point you run out of tomorrows. It's really important. Make a decision. Moment by moment, we are creating our lives. And by not making certain decisions, we're creating the effect of that in itself. It's sort of an unspoken decision. So in this case, the third step, we make a decision that's about willingness. Willingness, a softening, a willing to see things from a different point of view, a willingness to be open to suggestions that have worked for other people, right? A willingness, here's the big one, a willingness to not have all the answers, which we don't have anyway, so it doesn't. Okay. Another way of saying this is a willingness to be open to the truth. And I use that capital letter T. And I might, personally, for me, truth, capital T, is in many ways the God of my understanding, the higher power, which I don't always pay attention to, but also is the guide. The truth of how things are. For me, turning my life in care to a higher power, in this sense, is aligning with truth. It's aligning with truth, with how things are. And it can be uncomfortable. Have you ever had that? When you really see the truth of something, you go, ooh, it's not as pretty as I would like it. But at least if aligning with it, you can respond in a way that's meaningful. Yeah. So in Buddhism, The decision to commit ourselves to our spiritual growth is called right intention. And it's part of the Eightfold Path, right intention. And it's said that everything rests on the tip of intention. So again, it means making a decision, holding the intention to try to live a life based on the principles of compassion, ethics, awareness, openness, wisdom. And with step three, we try to keep this purpose in mind in all our activities. Now, we're not going to keep it in mind in all our activities, but if we can remind ourselves that I want this intention, I want to have this intention. In other words, have the intention to remind yourself of the intention, because that's how we grow, that's how we learn. How do we bring a spiritual commitment to bear in all things in our life? And that includes work, it includes sex, it includes supper, it includes shopping. None of it is outside of the purview of a spiritual life, which is an interesting to think about, you know? The other thing is, when we set an intention, what is going on will more likely get our attention. And we need to pay attention to our lives and to the people around us, and if we're driving, to the cars around us. Sadly, some people don't. It's almost like if you sit down to meditate, you have the intention that you're going to be as present as possible, and as Angela was guiding, and if you got lost and you realize it, then you come back. You come back to the breath. And that's having intention working through the power of attention. So meditation is a really powerful tool for working this muscle. Again, to be willing to see things just as they are. And you may be bored hearing me say that. I've said it so many times. Because it's just not that easy. It's just not that easy to do. Making a decision, intention, is the same as committing. It's committing. Committing to our recovery. I don't want to play too much with my recovery. It's the greatest gift. It's almost like my second birth in a way. Finding the Buddhist teachings was then my third birth. So I believe in rebirth, actually. Okay. From my perspective. It's committing to the higher purpose, higher than the addictive self, higher than the need to control everything, higher than the narcissistic way of being. And we stay on the path. We just stay on the path. And little by little, we see more and more. Although Buddhism and the 12 steps both require, they don't put it down as a requirement, that we develop faith in what we're doing. Thankfully, neither requires that we swallow the whole thing, the whole belief system. Both allow us to take it a little bit at a time. You know, it's so wonderful when they say, when you come into program, yeah, stay for 90 days. If you don't like it, leave. Or sometimes they'll say, take what you can use and leave the rest. I think that's brilliant. I think it's brilliant. Because if somebody said to me on my first day in AA, you got to suck up all this, I would have said bye-bye and gone out and had a drink really fast. So can we actually bring these principles to play in our lives? You know, give ourselves more space. We don't have to get anything, all of it, right away. But stay present. Staying present. So just as we talk about, or some people kneel in prayer to God, and I'm Jewish, I go to certain services, I love them, I help lead the Yom Kippur service here. a little bit from a Buddhist perspective, a little bit from the Jewish perspective. Mm. It's all really, really good. There is a place of a higher power, so to speak, in Buddhism that you might listen to. And I'll also show you how it's very similar to something Bill W. said. They talk about taking refuge, and I love that. Taking refuge is going for safety. Going for safety. And what they call the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. And I'll go into this a little more, what it means. And by the same token, we can take refuge in Bill W. This was a human being, like we're human beings. And my gosh, look what he did. And he managed to get sober and help other people get sober. And isn't that what we do? And when I say sober, I'm actually talking all the different ways we can be addicted. The Buddha was the first addictionologist, although he didn't know it at the time. Because he talked about how attached we are to self and this identity that we have. And that, as I was saying, I, me, mine. And it is like an addiction. So in that way, we're working program both ways. And the Dharma is the truth, the truth that the Buddha helped people see. And the path. Well, Bill Wilson, we have in Buddhism the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. And in the 12-step program, we have 12 steps. And if you walk those 12 steps, in many ways, you're doing the Eightfold Path. In many ways. I'm not saying it's totally the same. That's what we call the Dharma. And then the Sangha used to be the group of the monks who followed the Buddha. And it's become more like a like-minded community. Wow. We have the Sangha in all the different Buddhist traditions. And in the 12-step programs, the meetings, the places you go to, the groups you go to, this is the Sangha. So you can see there's a lot in common. So I said something about taking refuge in the Buddha. Can I say a word or two about refuge in the Dhamma? There's many different aspects to it, but the Buddha talked about three characteristics of life. And when we can live with understanding of them, our lives can totally change, and it's so much easier to let go of the grasping that we have. I'm going to very briefly summarize these. Because, you can do 2 weeks on each one of them and just get a little bit of it. So there's the existential fact of dukkha. Dukkha is an amazing word. It means suffering. And the Buddha talked about there can be pain, because pain comes with having a body and a mind and a life, and we're going to lose things, this can't help it. But then there's suffering. That comes from how we relate to the pain, that kind of dukkha. Another way that we create a lot of dukkha for ourselves is when we're living in delusion. When we think we can act some way and that's not going to have an impact, it's not going to have an effect. Wrong. Our actions have effects. Our words have effects, and basically our thoughts have effects also. And they get translated into actions or into words. Another word for this is karma, because basically it's talking in its simplest aspect, cause and effect. When we're willing to see cause and effect, how we cause, how we're at the effect of other causes, it's amazing how much we learn. He talked about anicca, which is impermanence. Everything that we have is going to disappear. We are going to disappear. There's nothing we can hold on to. Yes, we can put money in the safe or in the bank, and it's probably safer there than leaving it in our pocket. But everything changes. Everything changes. And that can be a wonderful thing as well. he talks about anatta, which is basically the non-solidity of self. We're not who we think. I'm not the person I was a half hour ago, 2 hours ago, 5 years ago. Look at a picture. Is that you? A picture from when you were four and who you are now? Yes, there are strands, but there's nothing solid. There's nothing solid. So we take refuge in the Buddha, we take refuge in the Dhamma, we take refuge in the Sangha. And I know people in program understand that so well. So well. In the safety of the Sangha, we can open much more readily to the sense of, I don't have all the answers, and it's okay. I mean, I'm always blown away by what I hear in meetings. Not what I hear in the halls or everything after the meetings, but in the meetings. The compassion is profound, and the sharing is so beautiful. If only people could talk like that, that kind of honesty. And the other thing, even just to be willing to take the advice of a trusted friend, a trusted sponsor, a teacher or a mentor, it's a huge movement away from acting out from your own ego-driven way of seeing things. So the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and if we actually start to live by these three jewels, we are living with turning a lot of ourselves over to a higher power. Whether you call it in the 12-step or you call it the Buddha's teachings. And then the promises come true. This is not a passive step. This is an action step, because you've got to do the work. And one of the actions that we need to do, I think, is to hone our awareness, to hone our mindfulness, so that we do see things as they're happening. And if we don't see them as they're happening, we can see them a half hour later or a week later, but we can see them. And that's really important. And I put in this pitch again for meditation. It does for our life, it does for our mind, it does for our responses to our world what the gym does for our pecs. That doesn't do so much for me anymore. But when we open to this don't know mind and trusting that there's something more out there, we are avowing a form of faith. It is a form of faith. A faith to lawful unfolding. Now, you can look at so much of some of the political decisions that are made over the years about the environment. It doesn't matter what anybody says in Congress or in your home or someplace else, there's going to be a lawful unfolding. We don't get away with squat. So why not see it for what it is? And as human beings, do I have time to, I don't know. I went to the accountant today, and he had a big fish tank. And I just was watching the fish. There were three orange ones that seemed to be playing around. And there was one little yellow fish that stayed over by the side. And I started thinking, was he having a problem? I just saw this big documentary on bullying. Were the orange fish, were they bullying the yellow fish? And I was watching him, and I was starting to get really sad. Now, part of it was my story, because I don't know what it's like to be a fish in a fish tank. But he was staying over by, and then all of a sudden he went over to that side, to the right side, and the three other fish went over to him. Next thing I know, he went over back to the left side. And I thought, my God, my heart was so full of compassion. Were they picking on him? And what that's like to not be taken, I don't know what it was like for him, but what it was like, obviously I'm still talking about him. What it's like to not be seen. what it's like to not be included. And I think sometimes we can get so full of ourselves that we don't realize that how we act can actually be hurting someone else, and very often somebody that we're living with. And that's why this step is so very important. So I started by saying as human beings, which got me over to the fish. I spoke to the accountant, and he said, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in the fish mentality, but they're not very nice to him. I don't know. Maybe he deserved it. I think it's time for me to write a... I'm going to be writing a book on this. I'll have a blog on this yellow fish. As human beings, we are beings, even though we walk around like we're doings, right? We have these amazing abilities to think, to feel, and to experience wonder if we let ourselves. And this step three sets us firmly on the path of freedom. This step three can connect us to the mystery of the heart and the mystery of life. Our job is to open the door to the mystery with joy and with gratitude and with bright attention. So I'd like to end with a part of a poem from Thich Nhat Hanh, from a poem of his called Call Me By My True Names. I recommend that if you don't know it, that you look it up. It's profound. Call Me By My True Names. This is just the end. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river full of tears, so full it fills all four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and my laughs at once, so I can see that my joy and my pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. Thank you. So What I would like to do now is put out a few questions, have you contemplate them, and then just have people share, either that or whatever you want to share about. So just something to share. What is your greatest fear about giving up control over XYZ? What's your greatest fear about giving up control over whatever that is for you? I'm gonna name all of them, and then we'll thank you. What things, people, or circumstances have you tried to control in the past, and how has that turned out? How do you feel in general about turning your life over to the Dharma, over to truth, to the way things are? How do you feel about turning your life over to being with things as they are? Which does not mean not taking action, but just seeing it for what it is. And then for yourself, describe who or what you trust and to what degree. Who or what you trust and to what degree.